Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, February 29th. Happy leap year 2016. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Monday, everybody. It is 35 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Actually, I thought it was about 50, but that was this weekend. Feels kind of warm, but I think we have another storm coming. So where do we leave off on Friday? Well, give me just 1 second, because just as the show started, I had a last little dribble of a Tim Hortons coffee sitting here from the weekend on my desk, and I just spilled it all over my index cards. Whoops. All right, hold on. Just mopping up the mess. Actually, it's not too big of a mess. All right, where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Dopamine, Hacking Humans, and Analog versus Digital. We've done all those topics before. It's almost like we're running out of material here, because dystopia is dystopia is dystopia. It's the same players, the same goal, singularity, becoming one with the machine. It is happening, and it is no longer fantasy, and I guess that's what we're documenting right now. There's lots more stories, but we're also discovering that there are keys that we are losing. And that's where I was talking about the analog versus digital. They're discovering that a lot of things, like sense of smell was one in particular that I had pointed out. Sense of smell, they believe, is vibrational. It isn't like particulates necessarily. They are also turning the periodic table. Every element is going to be turned into a note, because it has a signature that they can assign in a note on a scale and then play music as they're analyzing substances. And they typically will hear anomalies before they'll see something quickly. But it's very interesting that also not only the periodic table, but also water. You know, I was going to mention this on Friday. I kept forgetting about it. And Shirley, you just in chat dropped a video that I had totally forgotten about with the water, where you can take a stream of water and cause it to oscillate by putting vibrations through it. But also with cymatics, if you've ever seen it where they do it with sand, or they could do it with water, and they put a note for the sand, they put it into something like a drum, let's say. You'd have a drum with a taut piece of hide on top. You'd put the sand on top of the drum, and then you'd put the sound through the drum. And you will see for each note, there is a specific shape that forms. Well, the same thing happens with water. It makes a mandala. And even more interesting than that is, if you put some sort of substrate into the water, an experiment that I saw was with, I think they used cornstarch, where they took cornstarch, put it into a beaker with some water, so the liquid became viscous as opposed to being super watery, and then put a note through it. What happened was, instead of just getting a 2D image that looked very much like an ancient mandala, like that the Tibetans used to do the sand drawings with, right? They'd spend like years of silence doing the sand drawings. They also look like the beginning cells of embryo zygotes, you know, when cells first start dividing. It's pretty neat. You should definitely look up cymatics, C-Y-M-A-T-I-C-S. But when they added the cornstarch to the water to make a more viscous soup, and then put a note through it, literally, the I don't even know how to explain this. It wasn't even an object. The water itself lifted up out of the water and appeared to show locomotion on the shape that had lifted up out of the water. Like it almost had legs, like it was walking. And that was just by making the water a little more thick than just being plain water. So I don't know, when you start really like looking at how life maybe started and what were some of the things that maybe created shapes or designs, you know, we have all of these primordial shapes that keep occurring. You know, the Fibonacci spiral is one in particular in nature that is mathematical, and it shows up everywhere. It's a pretty interesting concept, but I didn't want to get there. This isn't going to be a metaphysical show today. We're going to look at more DARPA and robots. So anyway, where do we leave off on Friday? I told you, dopamine, hacking humans and analog versus digital. I think that where the crime against humanity is coming is that they are taking us into this digital realm. We're going to lose all connection to what makes us human, to what makes us part of Earth, part of life, part of the cycle of life on this planet by going digital, zeros and ones, by moving us off of that beautiful spectrum of analog. We are going to be ripped away from that which makes us human. That which makes us a being living in harmony with the other beautiful analog creatures that are on this planet so we can all live in harmony. We're going to become the zappity zap, zeros and ones. All right, so at the very end of the show, we looked at a story called Hacking Brainwaves to Reveal Pins and Personal Data, and we spent a lot of time digging into the brain. One of the things that I've spent a lot of time studying, because I have a kid, because I grew up, as many of you did, in that special time. We were the last generation that saw the world before the digital, the real digital world, the video games, the VCRs, the on-demand. We were the last generation that saw the world as children before that instant gratification machine started. And in having my own child, I have watched horrifyingly as I've seen just even small amounts of allowing them to be connected to the machine, how it affects their behavior. And it's all about the dopamine. I'm telling you, I see that addiction. I see the personality change. Take it from somebody who, you know, has been addicted to whatever poison. I have my nicotine and my caffeine. I know what it's like to have an addiction. We all know what it's like to have an addiction. Everybody's got their poison. But to see that in a child and to see those same behaviors when they don't get it, and the nastiness and doing whatever it takes to get what will give you that fix again, is extremely disturbing. And my kid is at like the far end of close to zero activity time online. You know, I mean, you got to give them some because they got to function in this world, know how to press buttons and get around. But my kid most certainly does not sit all day second they get home from school and get sucked into the machine. That will never happen here. But there are so many kids like that, that that's all they do. What kind of adults are those going to be? Oh, wait, we discovered last week. Oh, I had it on the tip of my tongue, but it's gone. It's Monday. Those dopamine headphones, if you remember, coming next month. And what was the name of that company? I was trying to remember. Hold on. We'll find them. We'll find them. I had to sort my whole desktop yesterday and clean up the disaster of tabs I had on all the machines because nothing worked again. So I killed a lot of the stuff that we had done already, but some of the other stuff I shared out to some of my other pages. Oh, yes, and on my Daily Dose page, nobody cares about the dopamine headphones because they probably don't know what dopamine means. I don't know. How could you not? But these dopamine headphones used an electrical stimulation, same technology that DARPA had been working on experimentation. The electrical stimulation on the vagus nerve right inside the ear, that would cause the brain to produce dopamine. So, oh, Nirvana, that was the name of the company. I knew it started with an N. Nirvana. And when we dug into who was in charge of that company, we found some pretty interesting ties with two of the founders, co-founders, people in charge. With Department of Defense, they'd won awards, the one dude, and I don't know, it was his blood heating tool or whatever it was for people who had hypothermia to bring them out of it, but he'd won massive government contracts when he was like a first little startup, so I'm sure it was sprinkle money after he was working in a lab from a university. DARPA probably sprinkled him some money, and then, yay, bingo, he won. The other guy, we found out back in the 1980s, had been part of the Star Wars project. And then went and became a lawyer. A patent lawyer. It was just, you know, and the one dude, he was like a thoracic surgeon and a cardiac this. And, you know, I don't know. His list was just amazingly long as one of the people who invented this device. So they definitely know what they're doing. We found that all these tech companies, especially the big ones that we use all the time, the Facebooks, the Googles, the YouTubes, the Twitters, have been using our clicks for a very long time. They've been using our information to be able to do experiments, social experiments, sociology, psychology, because that's what it's all about now. The resistant consumers, they want to force this new way of living, this 21st century that they've talked about for a long time. Even going down to Agenda 21, I got to tell you, after we found out that the U.S. government gave Google and their self-driving car the legal right to be a legal driver, so no one in the car will require a driver's license. We're going to get rid of the gas pedal and the steering wheel and have Google self-driving cars everywhere. We discovered after that what a great thing that is, because you know what? Now people can live closer to resources, and because of climate change, we have to take environments into consideration. And by living out in that pesky country, you're just using too much gas to get everywhere. We got to move everybody back into the cities for the good of the environment, and it's coming. I never really believed it, but as I'm reading more and more just about this whole mantra that's going on, I keep saying over and over again, not only are the robots are coming, but how we're going to build these whole new sustainable cities. Because you know what? Why wouldn't that be a good idea? Our entire infrastructure in this country is crumbling and falling apart. How interesting is that? Our water lines, our roads, our schools, everything. You know what? It's all got to be leveled. Oh, I don't know. Maybe that sounds like a good reason to have some type of massive disaster. It's all got to be rebuilt. And we'll build these new sustainable cities in its place. All right. I don't know. I got off on a big tangent there. Where do we go from here? So let's continue on. I had a video that I really wanted to attempt, and I don't know if I dare attempt it. What do you think? You guys vote for me attempting it? We could try. Been a really long time. This is one that I found a couple days ago. And you know what? We'll give it a shot. We might as well give it a shot. It's been a really long time since we've heard a clip on the show. I used to love playing clips, but it just became too difficult and it ruined the flow every time I tried and it never worked. So let's see what we could do. Let's see what we could do. It's trying to load. See what we could do. Oh, and I probably stop because it's already ruined the show. But I wanted to use some Skype because we talk about Skype here in one of these stories. All right. Hey, look. We might get lucky. Here, answer. Hey, there we go. All right. So anyway, there was a video graphic, and hopefully, I don't remember if there's audio or not, but we'll find out about the digital age. Yeah, there is, and its effects on the brain. And I've been saying this for a very long time. I've noticed it in my own kid. I've done a lot of deep digging into brain chemicals and some of the experiments that they've been doing, some of the DARPA stuff especially, because it's all connected. Trust me, they know how addictive this is and how they can use it as the dangling carrot to become the Pied Piper to take us anywhere they want us to go. It's all about the PSYOP. So here, let's play this.
For millions of years, the human brain has adapted to the challenge of writing, reading, and more recently, digital communication. Today, this adaptation is all about speed. Our actions are governed by the premotor and motor cortex areas of the brain. Children who've grown up in the digital age are exceptionally apt and quick in their actions thanks to the effects of reward-based video games they're accustomed to. This basic,
Ding,
motivating principle of gratification releases dopamine, a natural stimulant found in the brain's prefrontal cortex and limbic system, which influences their behavior. As multitaskers, so-called digital natives tend to store links rather than content, sometimes without reasoning or taking a step back.
stop. So she said a couple things that we had been saying. One was that it causes the production of dopamine, right? We've established that, the dangling carrot. But something else, and this was research that was done by Microsoft, they have relegated us now down to dopes with an attention span of 9 seconds, that below a goldfish. And the one thing that she said, and we also discovered in our research, that we're forgetting things, and we're forgetting things at an exponential rate, because in the past you had to memorize everything and to have it at the tip of your tongue, but now it's all online. So all you got to do is remember that you saw something, but you can always go to your tool to find it. It's making your brain lazy. You're getting flabby. And it said instead of storing information now, all these kids that live in this digital age do is remember links. They don't remember the information that went with the links. So let me continue.
And yet they need perspective in some combat games when the brain's natural instinct is driving them to commit an act of violence.
So commit an act of violence, especially when you're having that feeling, that mood. Go on a violent video game and cause some blood and guts with lots of pointy fingers.
Digital natives gain superficial memory as opposed to the deeper memory bank of their literary counterparts.
And superficial memory. We had the deep memory. We were the ones that remembered things in history. And history, remember, will always repeat itself if you don't remember the mistakes of the past. So, how convenient is that? Let's make sure the general populace does not remember anything long term anymore. And you see that right now. Like, people totally don't, we're never like me. All right, I'm going to tell you. When I was growing up, I hated history. It was my one subject that I just was so boring. I couldn't stand it. And so I did well, but I just kind of ignored half of it and pretended like, yeah, all right, whatever, Mussolini gives a shit. You know what I mean? But as I got older and I started digging into stuff and I started digging into historical things and going, holy shit, it's happening again. Oh no, look at this. Oh, look at it's happened. You know, I mean, it's proof. It's proof to prove once a quote unquote conspiracy comes out or whatever to show that, you know, this stuff has happened before and it will repeat itself. So, you know, the faster they can get us to forget, the faster that they can pull the wool over our eyes.
Linear approach helps retain information through a cognitive process performed by the prefrontal cortex. By taking cognitive control of this area of the brain, digital natives must resist the automatic instincts and reflexes triggered by computer screens. Because resisting these impulses in turn means taking full control of their thoughts, beliefs, and reasoning.
Yeah, controlling these impulses. And this should be something that they're teaching them in school as they're making them learn on computers. You know, that dopamine rush, especially to a child, is like a sugar rush. And we discovered that high fructose corn syrup also causes that same dopamine rush. But I'm telling you, if you've ever seen a young child and their reaction, and all it takes is one or two times playing on the computer. I'm telling you, it's frightening. It's frightening. I can see it in her eyes. I see the entire personality change. I do not like it. And how do you separate your child from that world? If, I mean, I guess we don't have to worry too much about it because the jobs are all going to be gone in the future. I mean, where are these people even going to have to worry about getting a job? Which we're going to talk about here very soon. It's happening way, way faster than they ever told us it would.
And thanks to education and learning, it's possible to nurture a way of thought to encourage creativity.
All right, well, that was the end of that. So let me kill Skype so I don't have this hiss in the background. I watched a PBS special over the weekend. We had recorded two of them from last week. One was called The Rise of the Robots, and the other one was called The Human Face of Big Data. And the rise, and they were one after the other. Lady Pitbull had actually messaged me when that was coming on saying, you got to watch this, you got to watch this. So I recorded them. They were DVR'd. And Rise of the Robots was sponsored by Google on PBS. And it was dealing with the DARPA challenge, just like we've talked about many times before. And it showed a lot of dopey robots with the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do music and them tripping over each other and ha-ha-ha hijinks to make the robots look like I said, clunky and nothing to worry about. But they worked their way through, talked all about DARPA and all the years of research and all the money they sprinkled and all the competitions. And of course, they even mentioned Fukushima. I've told you guys that before. DARPA had been making robots for a long time before Fukushima, or at least working on, remember, they bought 8 robotics companies in 2011, but it wasn't because of Fukushima. But after they had major issues trying to send any type of bot into one of the reactors because there was so much radiation, it caused all the electronics to fry. Whoops. DARPA said, hey, guess what? We could use this robotic challenge thing to make a good excuse to build robots right out in the open and say we were doing something good with them, like rescue robots. Yay. So all of a sudden, DARPA's robotics challenge, DARPA's whole push, Google's whole push, this whole robotics movement became about making rescue robots and, oh my God, Fukushima. It never started out that way, but, you know, they found a good way to hang their hat and get some more federal dollars or whatever. But, yeah, so they mentioned Fukushima, but at the very end, after watching all these clunky robots for an hour on this Google-sponsored special, and they even mentioned self-driving cars, by the way, in there, at the very end, they had the new Atlas II, the well-designed, very stable, non-tethered, walking, humanistic, looking, scary-ass robot that came out last week. And I know my kid, she watched both of these specials with me. My kid looks at me and she's like, wow, Mom, he's kind of scary. Oh, yes. Yes, he is. But the second special that I watched the next day after dinner was called The Human Face of Big Data. And this one was sponsored by Cisco. Now, I was a Cisco engineer for many years, not for Cisco, but I did Cisco gear. That was where my expertise was in the engineering world, in the networking world. And back in, I would have to say it was probably the early 2000s, Cisco had come out with a new tagline, like Google had had back in the 90s, Google is not evil. Cisco had come out with a tagline called the Internet of Everything. I helped sell the Internet of Everything. I designed and built it. And basically, the Internet of Everything was bringing the whole world online. But back in those days, many companies were still completely disconnected. I mean, it was surprising if you went into a small to medium business and they had a shared Internet connection for everybody. You know, maybe by then everybody did, but they weren't doing like IP voice or anything. They had still just a data connection and still just phone lines and still fax machines. I mean, that really hadn't happened yet. But the Internet of Everything allowed you to merge your voice, your data, and all the ancillary devices, bring on mobile, and start tying things into the machine. I helped do that. Well, the Internet of Everything, the joke is on us, because the human face of big data, these massive, and they did an aerial shot in this documentary showing the NSA data center. I mean, it is so way huger than I ever possibly could have imagined. But the human face of big data, of course, is us. The Internet of Everything, back from the early 2000s, has now become the Internet of Things. And the big joke of the Internet of Things, when we helped get the world to IPv6, version 6, which was the core numbering scheme for the Internet, for all the Internet and all the routers that were existing, every router that connected to the Internet needed to be upgraded to IPv6, because otherwise there wouldn't be enough numbers. That was the big deal. When I was doing this, there wouldn't be enough numbers to number everything that needed to be on the Internet. So we had to go to version 6, which then gave us two additional stanzas of numbers to be able to do permutations. It would be way more than enough, billions of gazillions of numbers. So IPv6 happened. But what they didn't tell us is that created the Internet of Things. So now here we are with smart everything. Smart underwear, smart sneakers, smart clothes, smart contact lenses, smart refrigerators, smart televisions, smart thermostats, smart cars, smart chairs. I want a smart chair. Smart chair that does heat and massage every time I'm starting to feel a little ache and pain. Smart everything that can be used to surveil us. We found a story last week. I think Claire Burnish did it on Antimedia about Clapper, that of the National Security, whatever. I don't know. It was Clapper, FBI, CIA, NSA, whatever Clapper is, the head of the something. Look him up. He's one of the intelligence chiefs. Clapper brought up the fact, like, how wonderful the Internet of Things is, because it's going to be great to spy on people. And DARPA Dan, who now works for Google, was also talking about building the Sentry system to protect the Internet of Things, because lo and behold, it's not secure at all. So the Internet of Things, this new, brave new world that they are forming for us, is going to take care of all your needs. Make sure you're not hungry, you're not cold. Make sure it tells you when your milk is almost empty. This brave new world is enslaving you to the point of biologically. When we start looking, and we have many times nanotechnology and these little nanobots in your blood, Google's Life Health Science that are working on it, as well as many others, it's going to be able to bag and tag us down to every cell, and now down to every atom. We saw they're working on atomic craziness to be able to manipulate and control. It's frightening. And yeah, maybe one big fat EMP, but I don't even know. I'm sure by now they got smart enough to have huge Faraday cages somewhere in the NASA data center or the NSA data center. All right, so this is where we're going to start. Story I found this morning in one of my transhumanist groups that I get really scared every time they post something that I've subscribed to. You'll have to choose sooner than you think, basic income or dystopian slavery. Now, I've talked about basic income as well before. This is what is being suggested for after the robots take off our jobs. And they said that's going to be within the next 10, 20 years at most. We're going to see more than half the jobs out of freaking window because of robots, industrial robots, self-driving vehicles, self-driving tractor trailers, artificial intelligence taking over, even lawyers' jobs. The joke is going to be on us. At no point in history has our human culture ever changed as rapidly as it is now. And I mean literally now, because by the time you get to the end of this article, I suspect that a profound discovery would have been uploaded to the internet from somewhere on the globe. In this modern world of sensors and sharing, we find ourselves in a time when information and technology are advancing with reckless abandon, and I would have to second that assessment. Rampaging through the history books and actively filling day after day with breakthrough innovations and realizing that in the past would have been separated by decades or even centuries. Just as interesting is the fact that we have known that this was coming for a very long time now, and we've been riding along a plotted path of growth, fast approaching what most successful futurists in the world, what the most successful futurists in the world, and yes, the director of engineering for the DeepMind project at Google, Ray Kurzweil, love him and hate him, calls the point of singularity. The moment that machine intelligence surpasses human intelligence, a time that could potentially give us an abundant utopia or an oppressive regime composed of the rich and the robotic. And guys, that is where it's headed. It is not going to be about utopia. Trust me. It's not how it works out. But while that moment is estimated to still be at least 20 to 35 years away, you know, they always say that, don't bet on it. Do not sit on your ass and wait for another 20 years for this to happen. It is happening today. We need to put wrenches in the machine. Do not conform. Don't take your new smart pill that your doctor gave you. Don't sign up for your new self-driving car. Don't get another new smart device put into your house. They need to build the infrastructure for it to all happen, and they're building it right now. It's being rolled out to the consumer. I helped build the commercial space. Now it's being rolled to the consumer, and it's going beyond your smartphone. It's going to be invasive technology. It's all working in your environment. They need to get it into everything. Remember, even Google had a whole partnership with Levi's. They're weaving it into clothing, guys. You're going to have smart everything. Don't be blinded by the candy that is the smart new tool, toy that they want you to buy. All in the name of consumerism. The AI Barbie for your kid. Dump it. Flush it. Step on it. Even get rid of your microwave. You know, it's no good for you anyway. I'm much happier. 2 years now since my microwave broke. It probably didn't even have something majorly wrong with it if I would have taken it to, it was, you know, one of those over the stove ones with the blower and everything in it. So it was a nice one. Just stopped heating one day for no reason whatsoever. It was still under warranty. And I said, nah. And we didn't fix it. And you know what? Here it is 2 years later. We steam our vegetables now, and we don't have all of this electromagnetic radiation floating around. I posted a story about a brain surgeon. What do they call them? Cancer doctors. In Australia, came out and started talking about microwaves and our wireless devices and all the electromagnetic frequencies. And he was very, very down on us being surrounded by all of this because he sincerely thinks that it causes many of the tumors and things that we have. But maybe we'll get to that tomorrow. All right, anyway, so we don't get off the beaten path. Let's get back to the story. So anyway, we're talking about Kurzweil and the singularity. And I think it's even more than when the machine surpasses human intelligence, because we're about there, the Turing test. The Turing test is when it bleeds the line between humans and machines. The Turing test was when they had an artificial intelligent bot doing like customer service and you as the consumer calling in and not being able to tell the difference. And we also have this whole exponential growth for when humans and machines finally merge. And that is like being able to manipulate DNA into self replicating, I think we did the DNA origami nanobots at MIT on Friday. I mean, that's using technology and biology and combining them into one. And I have another big story about that. Big success. Yay, get excited. And there was much rejoicing. Yay. You know, please excuse me if I don't get excited over these new technological advances like I used to. But, you know, the merging of human and machine, as they keep putting more and more synthetic into our food, into our bloodstreams, into our environment, that's already happening in a fashion that isn't necessarily voluntary. All right, anyway, so the singularity, and we are approaching fast. They're saying 20 to 35 years away. I'm going to say it's probably going to be a lot closer than that. And especially when you look at the law of accelerating returns, you know, I have a picture of technological advances across time graph here. It's showing prehistory, starting with the stone tools, fire, and wheel, going into writing, watermill, gunpowder, printing press, optical lens, steam engine, telegraph, plastics, airplane, transistor, fission power, space flight, internet, and mobile technology. And when they map time against invention, we've talked about this before, being able to use the machine to create a new machine, it becomes exponential growth. And we are beyond that point now. We are at the point where there is so much speed and so much technology available at our fingertips. Like, I even remember like 5 years ago when Google Earth and Google Sky and Google Mars and Google Moon, all that stuff came online. I mean, some of these amazing pictures. I was able to sit in my chair with the click of a button and explore my solar system and beyond right on my computer. It was incredible. I'm like, how, in what planet, in what time period have I ever had access to so much data just at the double click of a finger? I was in awe at that point. I'm not in awe anymore, because that double click of the finger, the double click, that dopamine reaction to double click is what's going to end humanity as we know it. All right, anyway, we are currently in the home stretch of heading toward the singularity, where the paradigm shifting discoveries are happening weekly in preparation for this climax. The above chart, and that's what I was just talking about, shows the exponential growth of these paradigm shifting technologies that we've been experiencing since humankind first harnessed fire, carved a wheel, and wrote their first hints of language into a communication medium that transcended mere verbal storytelling. Notice how it's now becoming vertical? That is us today, right now. Yeah, this is why we should all be afraid. And that is why right now is the time to start making some serious decisions about where this technological evolution will take us. So what does this all have to do with dystopian slavery and political economics? Well, I'm going to tell you. The bottom line is, we are about to lose a lot of jobs. If anyone's been paying attention to some of the job news lately, you're going to see anchors like JCPenney's, Sears, Kohl's, large institutions. They're closing a lot of stores. Kmart's slimming down, but that's all Sears bought them. That's all a big part of the thing. The whole oil collapse. I just saw over the weekend, or maybe it was the end of last week, two or three other large companies besides that air conditioning company that are ripping up stakes and moving to freaking Mexico. The big sucking sound has started once they inked that TPP. The Saudis opened the spigots on the oil. We put the, I mean, I really think that putting the embargoes against Russia probably wasn't a good idea. The whole war machine is in action. So don't worry about it, because all the congressmen that voted to get all this ramped up war started in the Middle East are probably making money hand over fist on the military industrial complex and precision medicine. Just about everything else, anything that the little people are involved with, is about ready to go poof. In the time leading up to the singularity, the advent of highly advanced AI systems, 3D printing, don't forget, there was another one of those disruptive technologies that we've talked about. And somebody's calling me, but I'm not answering. 3D printing, self-driving cars, virtual reality telecommuting. We've talked about that with the VR goggles and being able to be in the same room with your collaborators. The one video I saw, there were three engineers building, I think they were architects or something, or maybe aeronautics, whatever. And they were building something. They had a big blueprint. They're all standing virtually together in a room with these goggles on with a 3D holographic image of their blueprint in the middle of the room that they could all touch, manipulate, and spin around. It was pretty incredible. I mean, I actually worked from home for 13 years, the last 13 years. I was a remote worker. I'd go visit headquarters once, maybe twice a year. But besides that, it was all online. We did conference calls and video calls. That's how it worked. And I connected remote access using VPN. I was in the network. Virtual reality, telecommuting, and automation, unlike anything we have ever previously seen, are going to put an end to the need for unskilled labor forces. And even many skilled labor workers are going to soon find themselves replaced by an AI robot. And the Luddites should fear this because it is true. All rise, Luddites. You know, when we go back to the Unabomber Kaczynski's manifesto, something that I had not read until, I don't know, when did we do it? Last summer? After a possible suspect dropped me a link, and I finally said, you know what? I'm going to read this. This crazy guy with the messy hair that I remember when they arrested him. Let's see what it says. And he went on about all this very stuff. He told us this was going to happen. The man was not crazy. He was very smart. He was a professor of mathematics, I believe. He was a very smart guy. And he was raging against the machine, and they took him out. It was because back in those days, there still was time. We don't have time anymore, guys. So the Luddites should fear this because it is true. There are going to be a lot of jobs lost because of it. Self-driving vehicles alone stand to put an end to 8.7 million jobs in the trucking industry. And these jobs will be lost at the same speed at which technology is advancing, which is blindingly fast. So fast, in fact, that we simply do not have the skills or the efficiency of governing to handle it. In a world of 8 billion, momentum takes a long time to build up. Policy and bureaucracy move at an ancient pace, more accustomed in the medieval era than modern science fiskesque, sci-fi-esque, where one of the peasants and engineers can snap a recording of their efforts and thoughts and transmit them to the world in less than 5 seconds. And that proverbial relay torch can be grabbed by another thinker who uses this new information to solve the puzzle of their own, which can then be shared, which then solves another puzzle, which then can then be shared by another, and so on and so on. The snowball effect can quickly create breakthroughs so massive in their impact that they stand to wipe out entire industries or corporations in the blink of an eye. We simply cannot create policy and new jobs fast enough to deal with this. And so we need to be preemptive. We need to choose now. So I see underneath this is a pyramid. It's called the Venus Project. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. Oh, yes, beware of the Venus Project. Anything that sounds like some weirdo cult wearing white Lycra outfits. Keeping you locked in sanitized rooms. Be afraid, be very afraid. In this pyramid, the very top, they have a bag of money called the monetary system. And underneath, there's a picture of the elite saying, "We rule you." And underneath them is a picture of the religious leaders, and it says, "We fool you." And underneath them is a picture of some sort of police state people with AR-15 saying, "We shoot at you." And underneath, there's a picture of all kinds of partying bankers sitting at a banquet table with booze and glasses raised saying, "We eat for you." And at the very bottom are all the dead people and some very sick-looking people all holding it all up. And it says, "We work for all." And yes, it is the people that are supporting the entire system. And we are about to have a collapse, but it's because the future doesn't need us anymore. That's what Ted Kaczynski said. It is actually, it was the article by Bill Joy out of Wired magazine that was "The Future Doesn't Need Us Anymore." But in utopia or aristocratic slavery, still early. It is only fear of our survival that keeps us enslaved to our jobs. What happens when we have full abundance? Yeah. Full abundance of sure is going to happen. There's going to be a chicken in every pot, and everyone will be singing and smiling. When you have robots tending the vertical farms of solar-powered skyscrapers and self-driving drones and cars and automated hyperloops organizing transit and delivery, and shoreline breakers harnessing the power of wind and waves to send electricity back to their coastal cities, and 3D printers creating clothing and food at near zero cost. When we have all of these things, we will be in a state of abundance. Farmers will no longer be necessary. Oil companies and their laborers will be phased out. Construction workers will no longer be needed. When virtual reality allows us to visit museums in foreign lands, and the travel industry would see a great decline as well. And even those who do take the road will find their service needed to be handled by automation with no need for humans to ever get in the way. And the point is, just like everywhere else in the universe, our existence is based on getting energy. Whether it be from food, from sun, or from utilities and energy companies, even our jobs are in exchange for energy, and we are paid by our employers to use our physical and mental energies in exchange for money that will then let us turn it around to buy the energy outputted by a bartender, a farmer, an engineer, whose efforts are created by some product or service we desire. Yeah, I think it's even more than selling your energy. You're selling your youth and your life to be able to live. But again, when solar technology can power robots who can perform all of our tasks and we can clothe and feed ourselves for a negligible cost, then we've reached a point of abundance where very few people will truly need to work, or at least not as much as the inhumane hours we currently do. We'll be able to simply sit back and let the robots provide. Now, come on. You really think that's going to happen? This is what I've been saying, man. We're about ready to turn into useless eaters, ever bigger and better than we ever have been before. We will be overpopulated because we will not be making gobs of cash. We will become the full-blown guinea pigs of the system because there's got to be a way for us to earn our keep here for the big boys. Even our jobs are in exchange for energy. We read that already. All right. But again, when solar technology can power robots who can perform all of our tasks and we can clothe and feed ourselves for a negligible cost, we have then reached the point of abundance where very few people will truly need to work, or at least as not much as the inhumane hours we currently do. We could sit back and let the robots provide, setting aside minimal hours for maintenance. And then the millions upon millions of unhappy, exhausted, apathetic workers can stop numbing their minds and wasting their time acting like a consumerist robot to a callous, uncaring economy, and instead become beacons of happiness and passion who contribute to a society, their joy, and inspirational creativity. Oh my God. This sounds like a 2045 project piece of propaganda. And of course, aside from the psychopaths, what kind of person would prefer the former? Well, this utopia is achievable, but it won't come without effort on all of our parts. We must constantly fight to ensure that our policymakers and corporations do not restrict the flow of information and the progress of technology, or even worse, try to seize control of the breakthrough innovations and hoard them for themselves, thus making them inaccessible to the common person and thus the common good. And that's what they missed. Right now, they're making it look like they're including us. Get your smartphone. Get your dopamine headphones. Hey, line up for your new shape-shifting nanobots in the blood to treat cancerous tumors, because we can cure you. But we are the mere rat in the maze. We are the cells in the petri dish. We are the R&D line item budget that these corporations no longer have to pay for, because with real-time information, the human face of big data, we're pulling statistics everywhere. And with the advent of precision medicine and, you know, everybody having a dossier, and they actually talked about that, by the way, on that PBS documentary, but every single one of us has a repository that is being stored of information. Every moment of every day, every action we make, when we move, there is data being captured somewhere about us. But it's already happened. They've already seized control. We just don't know it as a species yet. But even if we prevail along this path to utopia undiminished by greedy oligarchies, we still have to deal with the immense job loss that will pave the way. So in order to ensure that the bottom does not fall out and halt our progress too early, and remember, they've been saying this for a long time about losing all the jobs, and they've all been saying, but don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, because that's a long way away. We found out it's not a long way away. In order to ensure an overwhelming number of struggling impoverished masses don't rip our world apart in their desperate struggle to keep a roof over their head and food in their bellies, we need some kind of safety net to survive the transition. Even in this near utopian future, housing will still cost money. Infrastructure will still need to be maintained, engineers will still need to be rewarded for their costly efforts, and capitalism will still need the competition and the fight for the consumer's dollar, and people will still need to pay for food and have the freedom to splurge on choices that help them individualize, whether it be buying a better gaming rig for their VR gaming career, a better instrument for their music career, or an education at a renowned institute. Maybe they like a trip to an exotic location to become a more cultured person, or even a trip into space. People will still be paying for virtual items as well, like buying new devices, experiences. And you know what? That buying new experiences, guys, it's going to be an app store for your brain. Think about it. I was just reading about this patent that Google has. They literally got a patent now for downloading, right? We were talking about uploading your memories to the machine, and they've been working on that for a long time, and the whole brain project, and that's all a part of this. But there is a patent for Google on being able to have an app store to download things for the brain. So we'll be able to download new experiences and continue in their attempts to individualize using currency. And again, we want this for the sake of balances, progress, and honing of our culture. Yeah, whatever. But we can't have this if nobody has any money. And we'll never even reach this phase if society first collapses under the onslaught of lost jobs, which really seems like it is happening faster than I ever remember it before, by the way. A situation that would create an impoverished majority caught in selfish death trap throws, yes, they're all addicted to dopamine, that pulls us into an apocalyptic peasant class, and the peasants are going to revolt when they don't have their dopamine or their TV or their computer, internet, oh my God, instant messaging, where all of these innovations and free thinkers who would be sharing their revelations are unable to afford the free time or equipment necessary for their work if they are even able to survive. UBI stands to solve these problems. UBI, in its simplest form, is guaranteed income that will be given regularly to all citizens. Yeah, what a great solution that is. And there are many varying forms, conditional versus unconditional. But for the purposes of this article, I am only interested in unconditional for the sake of this argument. In this scenario, every citizen might get $2,000 a month to cover rent, transportation, food, nightlife, and splurging, or even saving toward a big purchase, and then everything will be A-okay. They could use it to buy an Oculus Rift, oh yes, or a trip to Spain. And the city even gets paid from infrastructure usage while food purchases and nightlife costs pay the business providing the service. Nobody goes hungry and everybody has a chance to thrive. Happiness soars through the roof, abundance is maintained, and capitalism continues unabated. It's that or we continue to let people lose jobs without building a safety net. All right. And guess what? We're about plumb out of time. Make sure you guys stick around. We'll continue there tomorrow. Brand new show tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Al Master News. Make sure you stick around for that. And we have Lonnie Clark with a guest up next, hopefully. Hopefully I didn't turn off something. I think my clocks are off from over the weekend. Because I am not hearing a bumper, so we'll just talk to the top of the hour if that's the case. But anyway, make sure you stick around. Brand new show tonight, Monday at 8 o'clock at Master News with Brad Blankenship. We have live at 11 p.m. Antimedia Radio with Nick Burnaby. At 9, brand new show, Truth on the Tracks with Brandon Turberville. And at 10, Cutting Through the Matrix with Alan Watt, and that is this weekend show. Well, it's really weird. I didn't log in. I hope I got my programming right because I don't remember turning myself off. All right, guys. Well, here it comes. Make sure you stick around. Have an awesome Monday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Oh, there we go. Maybe I'm off. All right, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.